This episode of Truth Table is brought to you by our NAACP Image Award nominated book, Truth Table, Black Women's Musings on Life, Love, and Liberation. Get it where all books are sold.
Sisters, how y'all feel? Brothers, y'all all right? If this is your first time at Truth Table, welcome to the table. And if you've been sitting at the table with us all these years, we are so grateful that you have been listening to us through these years, and we are inviting you to partner with us and support our work at patreon.com/truthstable. Now pull up a chair and have a seat at the table with us. Hey y'all, welcome to Truth Table, Midwives and Culture for Grace and Truth. I'm Kemeny.
And I'm Christina.
This table is built by Black women and for Black women. So welcome to the table, C. How you doing, girl?
I'm doing great today. We have a good time when it's just you and I just chatting it up.
We do.
But we are not alone today.
We are not. We have a whole person sitting in between us.
Listen, don't we? Those who are watching, they're like, there's a person there.
There's a person right there. They're going to keep talking past her.
And we are fully capable of doing such. Pray for us.
We are. But you know what? It is our first Behind the Book episode of season 8. And we are so honored to have our dear sister, Danielle Koch Balfour,
Mama,
at the table with us. Last time she was here, her name was Danielle Koch.
She's picking up names and
Danielle Koch Balfour is the author of A Heart on Fire, 100 Meditations on Loving Your Neighbors Well. Welcome to the table, Danielle. How are you, sister?
I'm so honored. Like, I'm literally at the table for real.
You're here.
Welcome.
Wow. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Just in case you don't know.
Come on.
I believe y'all know Danielle, but you probably know her by another name, but that's okay. I'm about to read a little something you know a little bit more about Danielle. So Danielle Koch Balfour is a designer turned illustrator, advocate, speaker, and entrepreneur. She's the founder of Oh Happy Danny, ring a bell, a lifestyle brand and educational platform that uses artwork and resources to encourage empathy, inspire justice, and make complex ideas more accessible. And she has written this phenomenal book of A Heart on Fire, 100 Meditations on Loving Your Neighbors Well. And we need to learn more about that. So Danielle, we are happy to have you at this table to learn more about how we can love our neighbor well.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this book. It's been a long time coming and a very difficult project.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But overall, yes, I'm excited that it is in the world.
Yes. Yeah. What inspired you to do 100 meditations?
Come on.
I imagine 100 illustrations.
There are 100 in there.
And on loving your neighbor well, because you talk about a lot about different justice issues, mm-hmm, social advocacy campaigns. Mm-hmm. So why did you center the meditations, 100 meditations on loving your neighbor well?
Yeah, so given the nature of the work I do speak to several different complex issues, but there was a season where there was just one too many unprecedented events for me.
That's right.
I can't even actually name the one. There was one that had triggered me, I think, in 2021 to write, mm-hmm, a specific poem in order to kind of process not just what was going on, but the reaction that I naturally felt to what was taking place was to withdraw. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is too much. I want to pull back. I also felt the temptation to grow cold, mm-hmm, and numb, yeah, to injustice, because when it's just so consistent, you're like, well, I guess I should, this is just reality and it's just what it's going to be.
Yes.
So I remember thinking to myself, well, compassion requires us to not grow cold, because if we can't feel, if we can't connect, we're less likely to talk about it, do something about it, make a change wherever we are. And so I started writing this poem and it was really a charge to myself. I was like, mm-hmm, do not let your heart grow cold. Mm-hmm. The world needs its warmth. You know, the world needs your compassion. Compassion is love in motion. And when, you know, things get discouraging and despondent, let your days be the evidence of a heart on fire. Mm-hmm. Where I was basically, mm-hmm, saying, Mars. Just
Mars, yes. As you say.
Yeah, I was basically trying to preach to myself and say, mm-hmm, the world needs you to not grow cold to this, because your action, whatever it may be, does have an impact. And yes, I needed that encouragement for myself to keep going. And so I wrote that all out. It's funny because you'd think I'd be able to recite it in its fullness. I don't remember how the whole thing goes.
That's a good thing
no,
I didn't say.
No pressure.
That's a good thing I didn't say. What's the poem?
Right. Recite it out, girl.
Do your dance.
We'll be like, entertain us.
Listen, if you want to read it, it's in the front of the book if you want to.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay.
But yeah, that's kind of what inspired the broader body of work to say, yeah. I, in this moment, wish I had a resource that was bite-sized, accessible, beautiful, mm-hmm. that could encourage me just one day at a time. That's what if right. I can focus on one aspect of mm-hmm. empathy or justice or hope? And chew on that for a day and let that change me from the inside.
Yeah, I love that.
So that's what I wanted. And so you know what Tony said. Yeah. If there's a book you want.
You got to write it.
You got to write it.
You got to write it. Y'all know all about that.
You got to write it.
So that's what I decided to
do.
That's
great. Be Toni Morrison.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah, so absolutely. I love hearing you talk about compassion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
compassion. Love is, emotion.
And you know, the word really means like with suffering. So there is no real compassion unless we're willing to suffer with, to sit with, mm-hmm. And to feel what other people are feeling. That's mm-hmm. the very thing that we don't want to do. And so it's just a really helpful reminder. So this book has been out in the world. It's been moving and grooving. And I imagine that you have already started to get some feedback about the book and how it has been hitting people. And I know it's hard sometimes for people to kind of to brag on themselves. Mm. But I wonder if you could do that a little indirectly. Could you tell us about the reactions to the book? How have people told you this book has helped them or impacted them?
I love this. So I have really been encouraged by seeing people post pictures of them starting or ending their day with the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be treated as a meditational, devotional mm-hmm. of sorts. Mm-hmm. But I was very nervous when I put it out because people are used to picking up a meditational or devotional, sitting with it at the beginning or end of their day and saying, what is in this for me today?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I wrote a book that asks a different question. Mm-hmm. What is in this for my neighbor today?
That's right.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so it's requiring a different posture yeah, when interacting really. With it.
Yes.
And I was like, well, are people going to want to start their day not thinking only of themselves?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we need that. We need more of that.
We do. And I even imagine the ways I wake up or go to bed sometimes I'm just exhausted, but also I'm discouraged sometimes. Right. I'm looking for hope.
Why ever would you be discouraged?
Not like there's anything going on.
That's right.
It's wild out here. It so is. I'm encouraged by seeing people starting and ending their days. I've seen pictures of people having it next to their hospital beds.
Oh, wow.
Or saying, that's you know, powerful. I'm walking through XYZ and I'm so glad I have this as a companion. And I don't know why I didn't think about the possibility that someone could take it and apply it to something completely different. I'm writing it thinking of racial injustice, you know?
Yeah.
And people are reading it and they're like, my father has Alzheimer's. Or there's just so many different things that they're walking through. And they're like, I needed this reminder of empathy. I needed this reminder of what to cling to when hope feels distant. Mm-hmm. And I don't write it from the lens of a professional. Like even from the beginning of the book, I say, I picked these 10 pillars because, you know, I have 10 pillars of a life of good work that I think collectively prop us up and hold us together as people who seek justice. Mm-hmm. So it's talks about, again, love, justice, empathy, hope, but also consistency and redemption and these other things. And I'm saying, I didn't put that in there because I'm the know-it-all about justice and these are the things that everybody else needs to figure out. But those came out of my own lack and deficiency and noticing what I was missing and what was holding me back. Like, for example, community was a huge one for me and still is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if y'all don't know, I go to Quininia and I love Quininia. Shout out to Pastor Micah Evanson and Dr. Christina Evanson.
We don't typically advertise churches here, but
you don't. Y'all have to give me an exception.
Thank you. We didn't tell you to do it.
Right? Oh, definitely did. I'm sure she wouldn't have even wanted me to do that. But it's part of my story and I wrote a meditation in there about being both hurt and healed in community.
People need to be worried about that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And as someone who's walked through years of spiritual abuse, I needed to acknowledge the hurt. Mm. And as someone who is now engaged in a new church body, I need to acknowledge the healing that comes with that. And not acknowledging that can hold us back from adding to the body. And that's good work. Yeah. And so I wanted to speak to my own lack and share what I know and hopefully encourage other people. So that's how I kind of land on different sections, different topics. And I hope that people can see themselves in
it. Yeah, I love that this book is so applicable to so many different facets and areas and issues that people are grappling with and dealing with. People need to know about redemption. They need hope. They need community, right? Mm-hmm. They need all of these pillars that help to uphold us and keep us together and keep us human.
Right.
Right. They keep us in touch with our own humanity and the humanity of our neighbors. And mm-hmm. I'm so grateful and so glad that you wrote A Heart on Fire. And so let's take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, I'm going to ask Dani to read a little bit of her book. This is the custom. This is the custom.
Yes, we are. so you better think about what you're going to read.
Yes. So we will be right back after this break.
Our NAACP Image Award nominated book, Truth Table, Black Women's Musings on Life, Love, and Liberation, is making waves and shifting culture. I closed this book feeling like I had just partaken in a multi-course meal, filled with grace and the courage to carry on. And I believe you'll finish this book feeling the same way. Morgan Harper Nichols, artist and poet. Buy Truth Table, Black Women's Musings on Life, Love, and Liberation at our website or wherever books are sold.
All right, we are back at the table with Danielle Coke Balfour talking about her book, A Heart on Fire, 100 Meditations for Loving Your Neighbor Well. On how to love your neighbor. I do be remixing people's
talk. I was really impressed. I was like, I was like, oh, memory retention.
I love your neighbor well. Okay. Buy the book wherever it is sold. Okay. So.
Please.
Okay. Now, before we went to the break, I did tell y'all that we were going to have Danielle read an excerpt from her book.
Come on.
I just think it'll bless you. So, Danielle, take it away.
Come on, Reading Rainbow.
Of course. So this piece is called Hopeful Resilience. It was inspired by a period in America where we were talking about anti-Asian hate, and it became front and center. And publicly, we were noticing a lot of similarities and differences between Black women, Asian women, and women of color in general. And so I kind of wrote this to discuss the power of resilience and hope and connection and community.
Awesome.
So
thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. It says, this is a love letter to women of color, those who battle the two-headed beast of misogyny and racism. We are matriarchs, business owners, makers, and culture shifters. Our bloodlines carry stories. We are women born of women who carved their own paths and navigated generations worth of challenges. We see what makes us different. Our cultures are rich and unique, filled with powerful traditions that shape our lives. Each context holds within it generational triumphs and trauma. We faced our own battles with white supremacy and racism, our ancestral quilts threaded with enslavement, genocide, internment, and asylum. The steps we take to heal are unique to our circumstances. Yet, we also see all that we have in common. We grieve what has been, but we seek to grow into what could be. Whether we're crying out that Black Lives Matter or chanting Stop Asian Hate, we reach across divides and hold space for one another. When the world seeks to move on, step over, look past, or ignore us, we bring each other close, whispering, "I see you, sister." We continuously remember how connected we are, not just in our struggles, but in the ways that we fight through and rise above them. As long as we have each other, we are not without hope. We are not individual islands. We are bound together. May we be shoulders to lean on, hands to hold, and arms to embrace. May we choose to press on in the face of adversity for the good of us all. There is so much beauty to be found, both in the differences that seek to divide us and in the hopeful resilience that will forever connect us.
Amen. Selah.
Powerful.
Amen.
Powerful. You raised a lot of different, contextual, historical, and cultural differences, divergence and convergence, right, within the collective that is women of color, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm really curious about your own background, Danielle, and really how how your culture, your own family system mm-hmm. informed your work before you became, oh, Happy Danny. Yes. You know, can you trace some of the threads, you know, that really informed your work and informed your writing as well, too, and made you who you are today?
Absolutely, yes. So I am the daughter of Jamaican immigrants. Both my parents came when they were rather around my age, a little bit younger or a little bit older. Oh, I should probably ask.
Don't worry, no one knows anything.
Exactly. Yes, but they both arrived from Jamaica to New York separately before meeting. They had both went on the same journey. Yeah, wow. And so my mom was closer to my age at that time than my dad. My dad is a bit older than her, but they found roots in Brooklyn, New York, a thriving Jamaican American community.
Sure. Yep.
Plugged into a local Pentecostal, apostolic Pentecostal church.
Get it together.
Because there's double this.
There are
levels.
There's levels.
It is not the same.
Oh, that is a sandwich. That is a sandwich.
Oh, it
that's
is.
A Holy Ghost sandwich.
That's a perfect way to describe it. A holy roll, if you will. But yes, so I learned a lot about the power of community, the power of the Black church. The Black church, I've been hurt in so many ways, but I will always sing the praises of the Black church. Amen. Always. Amen. And so it ingrained in me not just a passion for praise and worship, but also community and the necessity of being plugged in. So when I'm unplugged, I feel it so deeply because I know the power of being plugged in. And so, yeah, definitely raising that, definitely raised to honor and respect. Those two are huge. And one thing that I took from my mother, especially, was the power of speaking up and being a self-advocate.
That's great. Wow.
She does not play. Mm-hmm. If the order's wrong, it's going back. Mm-hmm. With a long explanation.
Listen, I need to go out to eat with her.
It's going back.
It's going back.
Because I'm usually like, I'll just make do.
Well, I'm always nervous about what they're going to do back there.
You never know, right?
Like we have a bunch of trust, you know?
She's one to ask for a gravy for a meal that don't have gravy on it.
Well.
She's like, y'all got sauce back there.
We all have a thing.
Sauce back there.
You got the ingredients.
So, yes, I've seen that as a very powerful tool in my own life, her advocacy of herself and her advocacy later for me, especially when I did end up in an environment or a church environment where there was harm being done and seeing her rising to say, you know, I may not know all the lingo. I may not be able to describe what you're doing to her. I may not be able to name the harm this is causing her, but you're not going to do it.
Wow.
You're going to stop.
That's so rare too.
Isn't it?
Especially in religious spaces, it can be rare. Wow. That's beautiful.
And my dad, who's, you know, he has been a pastor before. And so the dynamic there is different, still loving, still supportive. But the power of a mother who's also an advocate really shaped my view of advocacy now that I think about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so, I think all of that really plays a role in how I view things now. And I see her rising up in me more now than ever. Now that I'm married, now that I feel as though I'm a little bit further removed from the 2020 tornado.
Trauma.
Yeah,
the tornado trauma.
What they call the racial reckoning that never was.
Well.
And I feel.
Never can.
It came
still
out.
Not reparations.
No. Oh, not even close. We're further away now.
We don't even have empathy, let alone reparations.
There you go.
There are levels.
Very, very far.
There are levels. Yes, but it all came together. And for me now, as I kind of awaken from the go, fast forward, fast paced, be on this show, be on this podcast, do this. Now that I'm a little further removed from that, I can kind of see where I am now, how things have traumatized me, how I no longer want to stand for certain things. I see her rising up in me.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting. Things I said I'd never do, I'm here doing because she taught me. She taught me. I think that's the biggest part.
I love that. Thank you.
I think one of the things that people don't realize is that you have to be safe enough to talk about that which made you unsafe.
That's right.
And so, which is why we can go into a whole new space at a completely different time. And that space, and one of the signs that the space is healthy or safer is that we can actually complain.
Oh, right. Yeah. You feel safe to complain there or to share what happened. Yeah, that's good.
We have to be safe enough to complain. And so, so yeah. And I love that the word picture that I'm getting in my mind when you talked about your mom. Mm-hmm. I've had the pleasure of meeting your mother.
Yes.
And shout out to mama. But this idea of motherhood as a position of advocacy. I don't know if that was your point, but that is hitting me all kinds of ways, right? It really is.
I've never thought about it before now.
Mother bear, right?
But mother as advocate.
And yes. I think
in a world that really still, obviously, is that it's deeply misogynistic and does not know what to do with women, thinking they have to do something with women.
Right.
This idea of mother, mother as advocate, mother as brave, mother as defender.
Yes.
And I think, within the context of my faith tradition, that's deeply biblical. So thank you for giving us that. You're always creating imagery, whether it's something that we can look at or it's something that forms in our own brains. And so I'm really grateful for that gift that you have. So I am curious, as you continue to use your gift. So I know you from the world of Instagram. And and while Instagram is a place that, you know, if you're very good at it, like you are, is a place that is that can be monetized and all those pieces. But in some ways, I think of it as a space where people are kind of giving away their gift, giving away their talent, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just curious if you can walk us through a little bit about the ways that you make decisions about how you share your gift with the world.
I love this question. Woo-wee. Yes. So my boundaries, in some ways, I was very clear up front about, as a creator or someone who's coming online and sharing not just about topics that I'm passionate about, but topics that have a huge impact on my daily life, like being a Black woman in this country.
Right.
I had to establish very, very early on that I'm not a resource, I'm a person.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the content that I share here is a reflection of who I am and what I know at this point in time. Mm. And it will not be everything you want it to be.
That's right.
And that's okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You will not commodify me.
Correct. You mean you're not God?
What? You mean you're not here for me?
The expectations are wild. Yeah. I remember early on doing an art piece called The Sphere of Influence. And I was basically talking about all the different parts of our lives where we have influence or can be greatly influenced and how all of that matters. And within it, we can reveal our call, whatever you want to call that. But so within that graphic, I put church there because it's part of my sphere of influence. As I was listing examples, I put school, work, the government, the church. And then I immediately got feedback of, you are normally so inclusive, but this is just such an exclusive graphic.
Oh boy.
And I said, is this your sphere of influence?
Right.
Everything
is mine.
I mean, and that's when I was like, oh no, this won't happen again.
So the people got triggered by church. Is that what you're saying?
Got triggered by Christianity.
Okay.
So church, probably there were some
people. Probably was,
But there were some people who were like, I don't even identify with your faith and this is feeling exclusive to me. And so I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You're stepping into my work thinking that it has to represent you.
I know.
Let me go ahead and I'll fix that right now. So that's something I set early on. And then another boundary I set, which is one that I'm sure you all are familiar with given the nature of the work you do, but is that I'm not a breaking news source.
Right.
And I'm not TMZ. Right. I'm not E. Like,
right.
I'm not
TMZ artist.
Listen, you're not going to get the first take, the hot off the press from me. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And I can't operate in that way because just as much as I'm not a resource, I'm not a news station.
That's right.
And so then you put a whole bunch of expectations upon me again to be not unbiased and to be, I'm going to be a little bit biased.
Oh, and, for sure.
And where justice is concerned,
we're going to be biased.
If you're wrong, you're wrong.
That's fine.
So that's another boundary. But is that more of what you were thinking?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, Thanks for letting us know some of your thinking out loud.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think people, especially when navigating social media nowadays, it's the contention. It's just worse than I've ever seen it on social media in the advocacy justice space that I occupy specifically, especially amongst Gen Z. It's.
What do you see? And what are you experiencing there?
Yeah. So it's almost militant in a way.
You mean legalistic?
I think legalism is a perfect way to describe it. Yeah. I have seen just a, how do do I say it? Because I want to really dive in. I actually want to do some sort of study, some sort of reporting.
Wow. Yeah.
Some sort of analysis because it is destroying us.
It's toxic, huh?
The requirements that are made of people to say specific things at specific times, regardless of whether or not they mean it.
That's right.
Yeah.
The layers and all of the trauma that can come with having to take something on that you are not equipped to take on.
That's right.
And then also people deciding, okay, well, I'm just going to be hands off all of it and deciding to completely shrink back from the power of the voices that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the demands that are placed upon creators or users of the internet to become immediate professionals, immediately knowledgeable about some of the most complex things facing our world today.
Yes.
There are some things that are not complex to say.
Right.
And so this is not me saying, you know, don't speak out about anything unless it's easy and convenient for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just a level to it where I feel like a balance needs to come into play, or it's going to start honestly really taking people out. The pressure.
Yes.
It's going to start taking people out.
Yeah.
So that's what I've experienced.
I mean, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about how there can just be a lack of grace, right?
Yes.
And usually the kind of projected perfectionism or holding people to, you know, you have to be perfect. You have to say what I want you to say when I want you to say it and how I want you to say it is rooted in a internal sense of not being good enough as well, right? So it's hard to give people grace when you're not gracious to yourself. And it's a bit of a cover up. And what you're talking about, that tension, I think we can see it expressed in different ways through different generations. But yes, this kind of, you know, if this celebrity does not denounce this right now, and I'm like, well, that celebrity is known for, I don't know, popping, locking and singing. And I mean, they're not like an expert in international policy and law or civil or government. Now, with that being said, we want them to use their platforms responsibly. I'm for that.
Yeah, sure.
But I do think there are times when I've seen people hold a singer to account more than an elected official. Mm-hmm. And that is wild. And we should probably stop that.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's true. I do also think that people make these kind of demands, incessant demands. And I think that they do it and they don't even think they really know why they're doing it consciously. I think that it's a lack of, unfortunately, I think it's a lack of, I think, spiritual, legit spiritual authority in their lives, right?
Mm. Oh,
because
the
church, unfortunately, has lost a lot of credibility.
Institutions in general.
Institutions, period, right? Yeah. But, you know, in the church, just for the purpose of our conversation, in our context, you know, leaders, you know, pastors not having respect, unfortunately, because first legit and illegitimate reasons, right? Because of their conduct, maybe because it's spiritual abuse, the headlines, you know, about the abuse, so much stuff, right? About their own personal conduct that does not align with what a pastor should be or ought to be, that there's not the voice that would often give some wisdom and some discernment on how we ought to think about these issues, these injustices, these wars, these genocides, that voice is not there, you know, anymore, right? And so at least for the majority, right? Mm-hmm. For the majority of people, whether they're in the church, right? Because that's true for people in the church and for those who have left the church. And then of course, for the not yet believers who have never yet really set foot into the church. And so they're looking for a voice. They're looking for somebody to help them make sense of what's going on. And so it unfairly falls on you and so many other creators. And it's like, it's beyond your knowledge base. It's beyond maybe what you're even willing to take on. And that is your prerogative. You're right.
I love that you went into that as well, because I also sense a desperation in it.
Yes.
Yeah. A desperation to be led and directed.
That's right.
And a desperation to feel like they can do something about it.
Yeah. People
and
want to do something.
This sense of urgency that honestly, and this could be a whole other conversation, but when we talk about characteristics of white supremacy culture, and sense of urgency being one of them, and according to, you know, certain definitions of it. Sure. And it makes you wonder who is at the helm of some of these movements for change, you know, for certain causes.
Uh-huh.
It can start to feel like, regardless of, you know, if it's white led, black led, Palestinian led,
uh-huh.
it if we're not careful, we can start allowing those characteristics of white supremacy culture to seep right on into our activism efforts and bind us up.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
The same tools to get us free can't absolutely. Be the ones that that's bound right. us up.
Well, that has happened.
Yeah. Well, we'll go ahead and say
you,
that.
You said it nice. Like, it might happen. I'm like, it has
it's happening.
Happened.
It has. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I mean, there is an urgency of now
yes.
when it comes to injustice, right?
Yes.
So there is no moment, there is no day that is too soon for the end of harm to others.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And yet the timeline and expectation is often dictated by some of the things that you just highlighted in the, mm-hmm. and even the methodology mm-hmm. and the way in which people find themselves turning even on people who ought to be allies.
Yes.
Partners,
exactly. We're in this together.
Because they're not perfect enough. Mm-hmm. And so to your point about this, what you're seeing among folks that have a desire or a drive to be led. But I think that's also holding hands. This is where it gets toxic. Mm. A desire to be led, but also a desire to control.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's where they get that kind of puppeteering of like, I need you to talk about this. Mm-hmm. I need you to do this. And mm-hmm. you need to do this for me. And to your point, E, like there really is mm-hmm. A deficit of moral leadership.
Yeah. Yeah.
Across
the board.
And I would actually speak about the U.S. context. There is a moral leadership hole. Mm-hmm. And again, some of that is because of, people absolutely have been outrageous in their behavior, right? Some mm-hmm. people have rejected it. There are other factors too, mm-hmm. but that is a part of who we are. We are always, the humans are mimic. This mm-hmm. is a bit of kind of how we are designed. We mimic something. Mm-hmm. And that's why it matters what is before us, what we hear, what we listen to, because mm-hmm. since our earliest childhood, this is how we come into being who we are, that's is that we're copying right. something. That's the right. danger in that is when you don't think that you're doing that, because mm-hmm. then you have no filter up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't know how powerful it is, the messages or the environments that we place ourselves mm-hmm. in, because we really are mimicking and copying. And we've got this moral deficit hole. So who are then we going to learn? Who are we going to learn from? And what characteristics are we going to start to make our own as well?
Mm-hmm. That is so good.
Yep. Yeah. That's a word there.
Yeah.
So, Danielle, I want to know, as we wrap up our time, and as if you have shared so much of your story with us and have gotten the whole social media world together, what is next that you can share?
Oh, yeah.
What is next? We recognize that people that we interview, sometimes they've got, they got all kinds of things next. They can't share all the things.
Right, right.
But what is next that you can tell the people to look out for from Danielle Coke Balfour?
Yes. So yeah, thinking about what I can share. So I mentioned this earlier. I actually don't think I mentioned it while we were doing the show, but
okay.
I am longing for a way to engage with much of the work that I do outside of the social media space.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Which is interesting given, what we've got going on. Social media is like my main platform, but I have a desire to go much deeper. I've been really investigating data-driven journalism, data visualization, and I'm so passionate about history. And I'm wondering what it could look like to take historical frameworks or historical events and apply them to modern issues for mm-hmm. creative problem solving.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And so
help us.
We need help.
Yeah. Because there's so much that I feel like want to leave. Hello. Mm-hmm. The more I read, the more I'm like, well, they seem to have it figured out.
Wisdom did not start in 2024.
I'm like, wait a minute.
That's for sure.
Yeah. it's so interesting. I read one small fact recently. I was reading about the sanitation strike in Memphis in the 60s.
Yeah.
And two things stood out to me very strongly. And I was like, oh, I've got to do something differently with this topic. One was at the beginning of the strike, they were really working to rally community-based support. And it felt like they couldn't get it off the ground quite yet mm-hmm. until 100 ministers joined the cause and mm-hmm. said, we're going to come alongside y'all and make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Took that thing mainstream.
That's right. Wow.
And I said, that is a very powerful note right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to keep thinking on that. But the second thing was the idea of, you know, we've talked about community a lot on this episode, but even when they would meet for some of their meetings and they would discuss their plans and plotting and scheming for justice, they had people who were boycotting. A lot of them were boycotting and their jobs and striking from working. And so they didn't have money coming in. So they heavily relied on mutual aid, and to the point where for some people, their activism was providing bologna sandwiches.
That's right.
At the meeting.
That's right. Yes.
And I saw the phrase bologna sandwiches and I said, it can really be that simple.
It can.
If you look at modern day activism, it's become so individualized to the point where it's like, we're posting about this thing is happening. If you are not there, do you care? Right. If you are not there, if you're not on the front line, what you're doing, I don't think it matters. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, we're forgetting, we're calling people to boycott people who could lose their jobs.
That's true.
Where are the bologna sandwiches? Right. What does that look like? How can we bring that digital?
People. That's right. Yeah.
And so, and it's just, you know, there's sandwiches and then there's mental health support.
That's right.
There's, you know, counseling, there's small group thinking of what are we doing besides being in these Instagram comment sections?
Come on.
Whose Zoom room is doing a training on how to handle abuse? Mm. Like they trained for the sit-ins.
That's right.
It's
that's
like,
right.
What are we?
That's right.
So I'm thinking through historical applications to modern day activism and visualizing that, what that can look like.
That is great.
That's what's next for my work.
I love that.
I feel like we're still going to need that.
Getting back into community, taking it offline, because honestly, we become dependent on these social media platforms, which, you know, there are benefits, but...
Which are controlled by empire.
But they're controlled by empire. By these tech giants. I mean, the minute that they get shut down, all of your stuff is
gone. It's over with.
So, I mean, designed to control you.
You know, all of it. Show. So it's always good. And we need one another, right? Mm-hmm. And so our human connection will far outlast the Twitters.
That's right.
And the Instagrams.
That's right.
And the Facebooks and the TikToks and whatever else is coming.
My gosh.
Whatever else is coming, you know. So, you know, Danny, I'm curious before we go, what is a word that you would like to leave with our listeners, with your neighbors, who are your neighbors, you know, with fellow creators, as you think about A Heart on Fire, which you poured into that book. Mm-hmm. What be your word? What do you want them to leave with?
Yes.
You know, what do you have to offer them in light of our conversation, just what you've written in your book?
Mm-hmm. So the first thing that came to my mind was I once spoke at an event and I had a college student stand up and ask me, you know, I believe all this stuff about justice and I'm passionate about this and I care, but my family doesn't. And the people I'm surrounded by don't. And he said, how do I change their minds? And I think so many of us have taken on the burden of mind changing, trying to shift people's whole beings and value systems towards causes that we care about, which is good intentions.
That's right.
But I want to remind the listeners that that's not the work. That's not your work to do. You're not in the business of changing people's minds. And I believe that the heart behind A Heart on Fire is the idea that when you are living a life that's lit up, you are so passionate about living a life that exemplifies your values that those who witness it can't deny the power of it.
Come on.
Even if you haven't been able to successfully change their minds with your words, you're living a life that's the evidence of what you believe in. Mm-hmm. And so the heart of the book is to help equip people to shift and form everyday parts of their lives to mirror and mimic the values that they hold dear, because your life can be a great testimony. So that's something I would.
Beautiful word of wisdom. Final thoughts. I love that. Thank you so much for joining us at the table, Danielle Cope Balfour, to talk about your book, A Heart on Fire, 100 Meditations on Loving Your Neighbors Well. And of course, we want to thank y'all for sitting at the table with us. Let's keep the conversation going. Tweet us, Instagram caption us, DM us, Facebook us, your thoughts on our first behind, yeah, please pray for us, behind the book episode with Danielle Cole-Balfour. Please purchase A Heart on Fire wherever books are sold. I didn't see that it's on Target. Mm-hmm. It's in all the places, y'all.
Everywhere.
So make sure you buy a copy of this book. And Black women, we have a Facebook discipleship group. So make sure that you join our Facebook discipleship group. Fill out all of the questionnaires. There's only four of them, y'all. Agree to the group rules and you will be admitted into our group. So thank you for taking a seat at the table with us. We will see you next time here at Truth's Table. Bye, y'all.